thank you so much. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here. And I have to thank Wang Ma for such a kind introduction. And also thank President Kim and Yonsei University for hosting our conference here today. It's really such an honor. I should thank all of you also. I'm always honored when students are willing to get up early in the morning to come hear some lectures. And so thank you all for being here. What I wanted to talk about today is the subject of research, and especially why companies today are investing more in research than ever before. It's a very expensive proposition for a company, and oftentimes research requires financial investment without a clear possibility of a payoff. And so why do companies do this? And to understand this, of course, it might be helpful to understand a little bit about what is research, but that's also a very difficult question. In fact, famously, Albert Einstein was once asked by a reporter, Dr. Einstein, how do you and your physics colleagues do research? How do you make your new discoveries? And Albert Einstein famously responded, well, if we knew what we were doing, then it wouldn't be called research, would it? And so it's a very, very difficult thing to conduct a kind of business, to conduct a kind of activity or endeavor, to enter into the unknown and try to make some kind of discovery, and then on top of that, try to make something useful about it. But what we are seeing today, at least in computer science and computer engineering research, is a tremendous torrent of amazing advances. Many of them core advances in fundamental algorithms, our understanding of basic phenomena in computation, and theoretical advances. And what is so exciting about computer science research is that increasingly we find that these basic fundamental theoretical advances also have applications to help people's lives better, become better. And when you have that combination, then you also have a commercial interest. Big companies like Microsoft and many others then see the possibility to take these research advances for the public good, for the social good, and for commercial gain. And so today, I want to try to explain a little bit from my perspective about how that all looks, what it is about research that is so exciting, this combination of fundamental advances as well as practical benefits for people. Even though I'm coming from Microsoft and talking about Microsoft, we are far from unique. Today, we are finding that top companies all around the world, and especially top information technology companies, are investing more in research than ever before. And here are just a few headlines from big companies like Google and Amazon, as well as newer companies like Uber. Huge conglomerates like Samsung, all just in the last two or three years, dramatically increasing their investments in research. In fact, it's hard now to find a top technology company that isn't investing into new capabilities in research. And so, what is happening now? Why is it that we are now in a situation, an unprecedented situation, where the tech industry is becoming more dependent and more heavily invested in research than ever before? The bottom line is that the tech industry is absolutely betting big on research. So this is the subject of my talk. Now, one thing to start off with is that the tech industry is growing very, very rapidly. And that growth is just driven by many things, but many of those things are somewhat invisible. I show this image. This is an image from a Microsoft product, and it is just an ordinary image of a woman going for a run, just exercising. But you'll notice on her wrist, on her left wrist, she's wearing a fitness band. And that fitness band has, in this case, 13 digital sensors that are tracking everything from her oxygen levels in her blood to her heart rate to her GPS track. And those digital sensors, in some cases, like the GPS track, are using computers out in the environment. In the case of GPS, computers that are in satellites orbiting the Earth. And when she's done with her run, and she syncs her band with her smartphone will have a computer, and that smartphone will be using 100 or more computers in a data center, in what's called the cloud. And this growth in cloud computing has been tremendous. To give you an idea of how quickly this has been expanding, this is an image of one of the data centers for Microsoft, one of our data centers in the United States. Microsoft alone, as a single company, has over 115 data centers around the world, some small, some very large. You can get a sense of the scale here by looking in the parking lots and see the very small images of the cars and trucks parked in the parking lot to give you an idea of how big this is going. Today, the customer workload of the computers and the storage systems and the networking in our data centers is more than doubling every year. And in fact, today, in our data centers around the world, we are adding more computers, more storage, and more networking capability every month than we had in all of our data centers combined just 3 years ago. The growth is just incredible. And to give you a sense of how fast that growth is and what's involved, I want you to look at this image of this data center, just full of high-performance computing, storage, and networking equipment. And if you look off the top of the image, you can see there's a construction site. Let's imagine that we were to fly past that construction site and then turn around and take a look. And what you will see is this image. The kind of expansion that goes on in our data centers is just tremendous. And in fact, just to maintain the current growth rate, we are having to engage in multi-billion dollar expansions of our data centers every year. And that is just one company having to cope with the kind of growth and dependence on cloud computing. When you take a step back and try to understand how can it be that we can have this kind of technology development at this kind of scale, it really amounts to developing a brand new global network. Something actually bigger than the internet was just 25 years ago. And the range of research problems in computer security, which you'll hear more about later today, in distributed computing, even in the social sciences and in economics, the range of research problems that are required to successfully build and deploy such enormous scale computing systems is just incredible. And so this is just one of the many reasons that Microsoft finds it necessary to invest in fundamental research in computer science and computer engineering. Now, as spectacular as that growth is, this growth is actually slower than it might otherwise be because every year we also see advances in the power of the basic components of the CPUs and the storage devices in our data centers. And this is due to an idea that's been fundamental to the computing field of Moore's Law. And so when you look at Moore's Law, this is this idea that as we are able to scale down the size of the transistors in our integrated circuits, we get an exponential increase in the power of our chips. And in fact, almost like clockwork, over time, we've had roughly a doubling of the computing power in our integrated circuits over time on an 18-month cadence. And this has been going forever. Really, since all the way back, if you want, to the earliest mechanical computing devices. The problem we have today is that due to physics limits, we are now able to see, within a very short number of years, challenges in using standard silicon technologies to get beyond or to continue the scaling. And if, in fact, we're unable to overcome some of the scaling challenges over the next 5 to 10 years, then the growth that we see in cloud computing will really become even that much more challenging. And so again, a company like Microsoft must look to the future and understand, are there ways to maintain the fundamental scaling of the power of the components in our computing devices? And this is another fundamental area of research in computer architecture and material science, even in quantum computing. Today, in fact, this is of such an urgent need that some of the earliest research that we do, for example, in using what are called FPGAs, or field programmable gate arrays, has already been deployed within our data centers. And so these are research ideas to develop new forms of computing devices, new combinations of different kinds of chips. On the one hand, contribute and collaborate on these concepts with academic researchers around the world, but at the same time, then invest hundreds of millions of dollars in order to invest this kind of technology into our global data centers. And so what you see here on the upper left is an image of an FPGA chip from a company called Altera, and this is in a package that we've internally called Catapult. And today, the network interface for all of our servers in our global data centers is now being equipped with this new type of computer. To get an idea of architecturally of what it looks like, I have this schematic. And so here you see the yellow boxes, which are the memory chips. The blue boxes are the standard processors, the CPUs. And now, connecting the network together are these new green boxes, these new FPGA Catapult chips. What is interesting about this is this not only allows us to have a much more intelligent and dramatically faster network, in fact, more than 20 times faster than what we had before, due to the intelligence of the computing engine, but in fact, we can, if we want, forget about or ignore or have no load on the standard computing devices and exploit the FPGAs themselves as a new kind of computer, a new kind of supercomputer. And last month, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, in fact, revealed this capability to the world and used it to demonstrate the ability to translate all of Wikipedia from English into Mandarin in under 1/10 of a second, in less time than the blink of an eye. And so there's just tremendous computing power in these things, and all of this computing power is just being consumed at an ever increasing rate from customers around the world, from that woman going on her run in every morning. So it's just incredible. And there are other elements of the growth also that seem to require tremendous amounts of research. In fact, some of the ideas are pretty radical. We worry, for example, about the environmental sustainability. How do we power these data centers? How do we cool them? How do we avoid chopping down more forest in order to make more room for data centers? And so in one experiment, we've been experimenting with building pods, data center pods, in factories that are meant to be deployed, cooled, and powered in the oceans in order to have a much more green tech concept of data centers in the future. And so the kinds of things that we see here, and we can see even the sea life seems to like this type of computing, drives us to really think about new thoughts. And again, in order to even conceive of such developments and then to look carefully at the environmental science of concepts like this requires an investment in research that really motivates Microsoft to go even bigger than before. Now, all of that is just in the hardware and in the growth and in just the relentless craving that the world seems to have for more and more computing power. But there is even more to that, because in fact, an even more powerful driver for companies to invest in research is not in the hardware, not in the architecture, but actually in what the software that runs on these computers can do. And one of the most important motivators in that software has been in the dramatic advances in fundamental algorithms, and especially fundamental algorithms for something called machine learning. And so what is machine learning? Well, in a nutshell, machine learning is simply the research study of machines that improve with experience. And today, we think of experience as data. And so, are we able to understand and develop algorithms that somehow improve the accuracy or the speed of what they do as they see more and more data? And that is the field of machine learning. Now, what's been exciting about the field of machine learning is there's been some tremendously beautiful and theoretical work in our algorithmic understanding of machine learning over the past 20 to 30 years. But especially in the last decade, those advances have reached the point where we also have the computing hardware to exploit those fundamental theoretical advances. And so what does that mean? Well, in this schematic that you see here, we have the idea of using machine learning in order to understand human speech. And so how does the system work? Well, what you see in the middle box is a machine learning system. And so this is going to be some type of advanced algorithm. Typically, you'll hear about algorithms based on something called convolutional neural networks or deep neural networks, or sometimes just deep learning. But they're all classes of algorithms that are being studied very intensively by researchers around the world today. And what you can do with the machine learning algorithm is you can feed it training data. In this case, it would be recorded speech from people labeled with the transcript of what that speech means in terms of, in this case, English words. And then in a machine learning system, you're able to give this training data to the machine learning system, and what will pop out of that is something called a model. And when you execute or evaluate that model, you get a system that can run oftentimes in a very, very small computing device like a smartphone that, in this case, will take English speech as input and then produce the words that that speech represents, perhaps with some number of errors. Now, one of the exciting things that's happened in machine learning, particularly over the last decade, is that we have achieved an understanding of the fundamental algorithms of machine learning such that if we provide more data, more training data to the machine learning systems, we end up with a model that consistently gets better and better. And in fact, today, just in the last month, scientists at Microsoft Research have achieved speech recognition systems that are actually able to exceed the capability of humans, which is just a landmark achievement. And it has, roughly speaking, been just a matter of gaining more and more training data and feeding them to better and better fundamental machine learning algorithms. And the other element of machine learning that has been tremendously interesting and exciting, both in our fundamental understanding of intelligent systems and algorithms as well as practically, is that if we take a system that in this case has been trained on English, and let's say we give it Korean training data. Well, in this case, we get a system that can take English or Korean speech input, and it can produce the Korean transcript, but magically, training this system on Korean also improves the English. And this is just a mind-blowing concept that in the research field is sometimes referred to as transfer learning, that there are kind of fundamental commonalities in human speech across multiple languages, such that in what's called an unsupervised mode, you get the training of hidden layers that's able to give you broad improvements. So to give you an idea of what this has all meant, about 5 years ago, almost exactly 5 years ago, at this conference, Microsoft Research unveiled for the first time some major breakthroughs in machine learning systems for speech processing and for translation. And so 5 years ago, we demonstrated a system that could translate speech in near real time. And so what I'd like to show you now is a video, and this video was taped exactly 5 years ago in 2011, showing the power of a single computer to translate, in this case, my English speech into Mandarin. And so if you take a look here, this early video, part of the video, is just showing that it's just a single desktop computer 5 years ago. Of course, today, we're actually able to do these same kinds of tasks on your smartphone in your pocket. But 5 years ago, this was quite an accomplishment and quite a struggle for us.
Hello.
你好.
I'm really pleased to have this opportunity
我很高兴有这个机会
to show you a little bit about what goes on in our research labs.
给你说说发生在我们的研究实验室.
As you can see, even though I don't speak a second language,
如果你能看到你即使我不说第二种语言,
I'm speaking to you now in Chinese in my own voice.
我说话, 你知道的, 中国用自己的声音,
it's pretty cool.
这很酷.
This is all made possible because of the advances in big data and machine learning.
因为在大数据和机器学习的进步, 这都是可能的.
The same advances we've been talking about today.
我们一直在谈今天同样的进展.
And while the system isn't perfect,
虽然系统并非完美,
in fact, you can see it's making a few mistakes.
事实上,你可以看到它让几个错误.
The rate of improvement has been rapid.
发展速度很快.
We think it will be practical soon.
我们认为这将很快使用.
We believe the underlying technologies will change the world.
我们认为 基础技术将改变世界.
They will help you become more productive.
他们会帮助你提高生产力.
And they will help you connect with people around the world.
他们会帮助你与世界各地的人联系.
At Microsoft, we dream of a world where language no longer separates us.
在微软,我们的理想世界里,语言不再把我们分开.
But instead brings us closer together.
而是让我们一起更近.
We look forward to all of you joining us in this exciting dream.
我们期待你加入我们在这激动人心的梦想.
Thank you.
谢谢.
Isn't that great? I can't tell you how exciting that was for us in 2011, 5 years ago. And what has happened since then is that we've been able to refine the technology and bring it actually to hundreds of millions of people today in a system called Skype Translator. And so if you're using Windows 10 and Skype, there is now a feature in Skype to allow you to speak in different languages to anyone around the world. Today we're supporting 9 languages, and every couple of months we're adding a new language to the system. And in case you're curious, yes, we are working on Korean today, but we don't know when exactly we'll have it released. But the point here is that we see this amazing and exciting interplay between fundamental advances in our understanding of machine learning, algorithms for machine learning, and an ability then to scale these out to products like Skype, products that reach and are used by hundreds of millions of people around the world. And when that happens, the research becomes more than about machine learning. It's not just about translation, not just about speech, but it becomes also about distributed computing. It becomes about human-computer interaction. It becomes about social networking. And so, in fact, as these things get deployed out, the number of research problems to work on expands. Incredibly exciting. The other thing that happens when we bring these things out to so many people is that we get surprised. Because what we find over and over again is that people use our research ideas in ways that we never thought of before, that we never dreamed about before. And so I'd like to show you a video of just one of the surprises that we encountered in some schools that have been using this type of technology just last year. So let me show you.
More recently, we've actually been looking at the use of Skype Translator in the classroom for kids that are hard of hearing or deaf.
Vinny had hearing loss due to chemotherapy, and he's had hearing aids since he was 3 years old.
你们是在家还是在学校? You are at home or at school?
We are all at school right now.
There are deaf and hard of hearing students that are in the speaking classroom. They call this mainstreaming.
Did you know that Starbucks is from Seattle?
It's easier to communicate with my teachers and to get what I have to get in school done rather than other schools where it was just so hard for me with my hearing problem and such.
You tried Peking duck.
That sounds pretty good.
I became deaf when I was one.
I'm just profoundly deaf and qualified for cochlear implants.
That often requires an interpreter, whether it's sign language interpreters or whether it's closed captioning. The problem is it doesn't scale.
Can you not talk about eating? I was hungry.
The idea that when he is in school in the future, if he can actually be watching the professor talk without having to be facing him, I think would be really exciting.
I was able to be with all of my friends and talk to someone in China who was speaking a different language than me, and I could see what they were saying on the screen, so I could perfectly understand what they were telling me.
The technology is young, so we're kind of seeing how it's evolving and how people are using it.
What kinds of anime do you like to watch?
Anime.
I love Miyazaki. June especially likes Spirited Away.
Yeah!
Yes!
There's something about that that I just love. And in fact, motivated by this, these schools, in fact, about 200 schools around the U.S. have started to adopt this Skype translator technology in order to integrate students who are deaf into their normal classrooms. And that has motivated us to add new features to Skype to support that particular use case. It has also helped us invest new resources into doing research specifically on accessibility to help people who have physical handicaps actually integrate in society better. And so again, we see that the use just motivates more and more research, motivates Microsoft to bet more on research. And that kind of surprising aspect is actually one of the things I find the most important and most pleasing about research. You'll hear tech companies around the world, companies like Microsoft, like Google, Facebook, Amazon, you name it, Samsung, always talking about disruption. They want to disrupt the market. They want to disrupt their competitors. They want to create disruptions that please and delight people, that benefit their lives. But where does that disruption come from? That disruption comes oftentimes from surprising outcomes. And surprising outcomes from research is something that I always have referred to as serendipity. And I struggled to try to explain what is meant by serendipity. There's no direct translation into Korean. But it is those happy, unexpected accidents. When you are going for one goal, but along the way, you sort of trip over something else that maybe is even better and more important. And serendipity is really one of the fundamental joys of research, and it aligns with what tech companies are looking for, because tech companies are desperate for that next big thing, for that next big disruption. And those disruptions are oftentimes outcomes of serendipitous events from basic research. Here's another example of that serendipity. I talked earlier about machine learning that's used to understand human speech. And today, those human speech systems use machine learning based on ideas called hidden Markov models or Gaussian mixture models and deep neural nets. Well, those same technologies, those same speech processing pipelines can also be used in some very surprising ways. And so, this is a strange passage in English, and it's very strange, but it's an important one if you want to prove how fast you are at text messaging on your smartphone. So in fact, if you're able to type this into your smartphone in under 18 seconds, you can be the world record holder for text messaging speed. So you should try it. Well, of course, one way to get faster text messaging is to use swiping motions on the keyboard on your smartphone. But those swiping motions, of course, if you do them quickly, are very messy and hard to interpret. But it turns out, through a bit of serendipity, that understanding those swiping motions can be done very, very effectively using the same machine learning that we use in our speech processing systems and our machine translation systems. And so, in fact, 2 years ago, we captured the Guinness World Record for text messaging speed using this system called WordFlow. And so, since it's only 18 seconds, let me show you what it looks like.
One, two, three, go. Check the text in.
Congratulations.
And so later we'll have Dr. Wei Ying Ma come out and demonstrate that for all of you. But you know, I'm of course, we had much better luck with a young person trying to do this than someone like me. If you want to try that system out yourself, if you have an iPhone or you have Android, you can install the Microsoft WordFlow keyboard on your smartphone or the SwiftKey keyboard, and you can use the same machine learning technology. And so again, it's just this wonderful thing where we're seeing this ability to take research ideas, deploy them, in this case, to hundreds of millions of people, and we learn new things when we do that, that sparks more research. It's not just about language. Increasingly, machine learning is also giving computers the ability to see. And the idea of machines that can not only interact by listening to human speech, translating human speech, interacting that way, but also seeing things, seeing the world, is advancing incredibly rapidly. And in fact, using the same kind of deep neural net algorithms, we now have systems that are just getting tremendously effective at seeing the world and instantly recognizing the location and identity of all the objects in the scene. And these advances have been just absolutely startling. Year by year, we see more and more advances, and in some cases now, in some limited circumstances, we are achieving human parity in these systems. And if we put the language capabilities and the vision capabilities together, we actually have the ability to use systems to actually interact with people. And if you would all like to try out our technology here, you can use your smartphone and simply go to captionbot.ai. And just point your smartphone at anything, and our machine learning systems will attempt to tell you in English what it is that you're looking at. It doesn't always work perfectly, but if you give us feedback, because it's machine learning, the more data it gets, the better the system gets over time. The other aspect of machine learning is that machine learning isn't just about being like people, in the sense of being able to interact through speech or through vision, but also empowering people to be better and more productive. And this is about the theme of this conference, about AI and humans working together harmoniously. And in that situation, we will see machine learning always in the background. And one example I'd like to show you is in this video. This is a picture of one of our researchers, Shahram Azadi, and actually he is now starting a new company called Perceptive.io. But before he left to start his company, he was working on a concept called holoportation. So now what is this? Well, you will see surrounding him here are these special cameras. These are 3D capture cameras that are able to see with two eyes, with two cameras, to capture the three-dimensional scene in a room. And in fact, in this room, there are 8 such cameras. Altogether, the 3D content that's being captured is about 2 gigabits per second of data, a massive amount of data. And so now the question is, can we capture that 2 gigabits per second of 3D data, transmit that over the internet, and then reconstruct it that 3D data on the other side so that someone can see it and interact with it? And can we do all of that in real time? And this is a tremendously challenging data compression problem. And what we are seeing in our advances in fundamental algorithms for data compression, for 3D representations, for machine learning to understand the dynamics and kinematics of the human form, is incredible advances in being able to achieve this kind of compression. And so let me show you a little bit about what that then allows us to do.
Using this type of capture technology to connect with family members who are thousands of miles away. And that's exactly what we're going to demonstrate to you right now. My daughter is stood in a similar capture rig somewhere else in our lab. And she's going to holoport into my space, and I'm going to interact with her wearing my HoloLens.
Hi, Bob, I miss you.
Hey, Lily, I miss you too.
Are you coming home?
I'm coming home very soon. Let me get out of your way. Hey, Lilia, you can only hear me, you can't see me, but what are these toys?
I have toys to show you. This one, his name is Elmo.
Elmo?
And he can sing.
He can sing, wow. And what about the other one?
The other one is called Tina, and I like it because it has different stuff.
Well, that's so cool. So, Lilia, can you climb up on this chair that's behind
climb?
You? Yeah, climb up. Be very careful. Now, I'm going to count to three, and I want you to jump. One, two, three, jump! That was so cool.
So, I have to say that Sharam's daughter is incredibly cute. but, you know, what is amazing here is the ability to now, for the first time, we are just very close to the ability, due to the advances in algorithms and sensors, to be able to teleport ourselves and be with other people in real time. But because it's digital, we can also record these experiences and relive them. And so let me continue this.
But our system is capable of another thing. We can actually record and play back that entire session. Now, this is almost like reversing through time. And if I wear my HoloLens device, it's almost like walking into a living memory that I can see through another pair of eyes from all these different perspectives. And because this is 3D content, we can miniaturize it onto this coffee table and experience it in a more convenient manner. And this becomes a magical way of experiencing these live captured memories.
So when I see this, I have a son, and he is 18 years old now, but boy, I would have given anything to have this technology when he was growing up to be able to relive his early years. And it's just absolutely clear that people will want to do these kinds of experiences that are really powered by the cloud, by all of the advances in computing power that we see there, hyperscale global computing power, but more importantly, our advances, research advances in algorithms and machine learning and AI. So I hope you get the idea of what it is that motivates a company like Microsoft, but also many, many other companies around the world, to bet more and more on research. It is to give these companies, give our company and for other companies a chance to have access to these kinds of new experiences, to contribute to human knowledge worldwide, but also to have some chance for commercial successes. And one reason why we are here with you is we are hoping that some of you someday will want to also engage in research, because the world needs more research. Now, if you want to start today with the things that we have, one place to look is at Microsoft, something called Cognitive Services. And Cognitive Services is a set of APIs. So if you have some skill with computer programming, you can use these AIs to make some AI-powered experiences. And in fact, we have examples in Cognitive Services. For example, about a year ago, we had an app called howold.net that, where you can take a picture of any group of people, and it will tell you where who the people where the faces are for all of the people and make a guess as to how old they are. And we give you the source code for these applications so that you can look and see how we do it and hopefully build and invent your own experiences. It's a great thing to do. And so to summarize, what we can see is that there are trends right now in computing, in hyperscale computing, in access to big data and the ability to exploit it through better and better algorithms and advances in machine learning and AI. And so these things just motivate Microsoft to make bigger and bigger bets on research. Now, before I close, I'd like to make a broader comment that actually motivates Microsoft in a really fundamental way, and in fact touches on the theme of this conference of humans and machines working together. In the mid-1400s, around 1452, a very important book was produced. It was called the Gutenberg Bible. And the Gutenberg Bible was extremely important, not only because it, of course, was an important book, but it was produced on a new technology, the technology of mass-produced movable type. And so the printing press, the Gutenberg press, based on mass-produced movable type, was a new technology. And why was that technology important? Well, at the time that the Gutenberg Bible was first printed, historians estimate that in all of Europe, there were about 30,000 books. But after the development of the Gutenberg press, in less than 50 years, several thousand printing presses had spread throughout Europe. And the number of books in Europe went from 30,000 to over 12 million in just 50 years. In a sense, that was a Moore's law, a medieval Moore's law. The ability to democratize access to knowledge in books was incredibly disruptive. If you think of yourself as a parent, in that 50 years, suddenly the concept of what it means to make sure your children are educated was beginning to change very rapidly. Organizations such as the churches in Europe in the mid-1400s suddenly lost the kind of control over the access to knowledge. And these ideas of really spreading access to knowledge was enabled by this advance in technology, namely the technology of movable type. Today, we believe that it's possible that the advances we are seeing in computing technology are every bit as disruptive as the advances in movable type, that the advances in big data, in hyperscale computing infrastructure, and in algorithms and AI really amount to a new kind of movable type. And our CEO, Satya Nadella, has spoken publicly about his belief that Microsoft's mission is therefore to democratize access to this tremendous new power. And so the mission for us that we take very seriously within Microsoft is to empower every person or organization on the planet to achieve more. And ultimately, the conclusion of my talk is that motivates Microsoft to make bigger and bigger investments in research. Now, before I close, I just wanted to say how tremendously proud I am to be here. Both my mother and father are graduates of Yonsei University, and they just could not be more proud of the fact that I have a chance today to meet all of you. So thank you all for your attention, and enjoy the rest of the conference.